Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Billy G's Carolina Barbecue brings us a national anthem at noon every day. If you head on down to Founders on the flash sale tickets, they'll be right down the right field line with Billy G's. Be able to go grab you some good barbecue there at the stadium. Barbecue, beer, baseball. I mean, you know, it's hard to beat all of that, especially when it's the last conference game at home. But we are joined now by none other than the fleet of foot, Perry Orth, new father. Perry, how's fatherhood treating you, man?
Oh man, they don't tell you. Here's what they say. They say that your life is going to change, but they don't really warn you. I think there was a perfect. There was a video. I think Garcia sent it to me of all people, where there was a reel that was going around, and there was somebody talking about parenthood, and the video starts off talking that when you find out that you're going to have a kid, all your friends and your family are like, oh, yeah, that's so amazing. You're so, you know, so happy for you, blah, blah, blah. And then when you have the kid, they turn around the next time they see you and they're like, welcome to hell. You know, like this big exaggerated. Yeah, you getting any sleep? Like, what are you doing? So, it's been fun. It's been a learning curve. But, yeah, I got a little baby girl. Probably going to be a little volleyball player like her mom. Obviously, it's way too early to tell. She's almost 5 months, but when she does like her crazy arms or whatever, she's very left hand dominant. Which, if you guys have ever watched a volleyball match before, whether indoor or beach, the lefties, just like pitchers, right? When they spike the ball, there's a weird spin that comes off their hand, and it's a little bit of an unnatural. Or it's a little unusual movement for, you know, your standard player. So maybe we'll get her in the garnet and black one day, smacking the volleyball around.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Just like mom.
Sure. Yeah, just like mom. That's right. Well, I mean, they're going to take after one or the other. So, you know.
Yeah, we need her to take after her mom. Her mom's the athletic one of the family.
Come on,
I just pay the bills. That's all I'm here for.
Hey, Perry, it's Mike. I haven't had a chance to join you when you've come on the show, going back to, I guess, last fall, right? That's been It's been a odd minute. Help me refresh my memory. Did you redshirt, or was your first year on campus 2013?
So it was technically a red shirt in 2012. So I came in January of 13. So it would have been my red shirt freshman year. And so because I was a walk on, I had, everything happened so late. It was like a week before signing day, they decided that they were going to offer me a preferred walk on. And by then I hadn't applied to school. When I applied to school, the freshman class was already filled, right? It was already done and booked up. And so I had to come in December. And looking back, I wish I would have just waited to start my eligibility clock. But I took some classes to kind of get my freshman year started at a local tech school while I just worked out and trained and got ready to come up. And so while I was doing that, I technically had to burn a redshirt year in 2012.
I gotcha. So you really are the perfect person to ask this question, I think. And I don't know if you've been asked it before on this show, but I think years from now, you know, people are going to look back at that 4-year stint under Spurrier, 2010 through 2013, as the best 4-year span in the history of Gamecock football. Now, hopefully that there'll be some more competition, but as of right now, it's not even a close race, quite honestly. But then, as we know, like every great run, and as I like to point out, and JC can tell you, I've said this a number of times on JC and Morgan, every program has their high water mark, and then, you know, the high water mark never ends well, right? Like something, just like when you have a legendary head coach, when you hire one of those things, one of those guys, it's great, and you enjoy the benefits of that, but it rarely ends well. Yeah. Obviously, it didn't end well with Steve Spurrier, and so you were there for both of it. You were there for the high water mark. And you were there when the wheels came completely off. And some would say Gamecock football hasn't been the same since. So take me through that. Take me through that experience as a guy that's in the locker room, that's enjoying the ultimate highs, and then watching slowly but surely just the downgrading of the program. And eventually, of course, Steve saying, I'm not getting it done anymore. I'm out of here.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think that I've had lots of time to reflect on it. There's been a lot of people that asked me about it over the, you know, since I've been done, you know, over the last 7 years now. But having a lot of time to reflect, and honestly, the best time to reflect was after, you know, when I started coaching. And really now I don't even look at myself as an athlete anymore. I look as myself as a coach. Right. And looking back, what I saw were dating back to 2013 were teams with incredible ability, right? You had depth at the quarterback position. You had Jadavian Clowney, and got our defensive line in that year was Jadavian Clowney, Chaz Sutton, Kelsey Quarles, three guys that were all SEC, all American players. I mean, if one of those guys was on our team now, they would be, you know, talked about as, you know, one of the top tier guys in the conference, yada, yada, yada. But because they were all three so good, and Clowney just he shined so bright that the other two didn't really get the credit they deserved. Secondary was talented. You know, he had guys like Vic Hampton and Jimmy Legree that were just lockdown corners. And we played fast. We played physical. Connor, in his senior year, knew the offense. Obviously, Dylan was playing really well. We just had really, really good players all around. Then the next year, we lost a lot of talent on defense. We lost really the defensive line, so teams were able to run the ball at will. You know, you go back and you watch Dylan, his offense, I mean, it was one of the better offenses Spurrier's ever had in the history of his coaching career as far as points, yards, passing yards per game. They averaged 36, 37 a game, something like that. They were explosive. We just didn't have the defense to supplement it. But then it was a combination of both. Moving from 2014 into 2015 was there. We didn't have the caliber of player. I think that there was a little downfall in the recruiting of players, where the recruiting wasn't as thorough. It was like, you're a high recruit, or you've got some stars, you've got some buzz. Let's go ahead and take you. And that's never good. There's obviously, you know, I look at it like I do in the business world. When you're interviewing someone, you want to look at their past. You want to look at what they've done, what you can see yourself, and how you project them into a role with your with your company. And it's the same thing with recruiting. It's the same thing with coaches search. So it was a combination of the players weren't good or as good as they were. And honestly, I know I've heard Coach Spurrier talk about this a bunch, and I agree with him. We had a bunch of guys that just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care. They were on the team. We were South Carolina. We were going to win because we were South Carolina. And that just wasn't the case. And there were many, many times where I sit back and, and I look around, and there was a handful of guys like myself that would literally have like ripped off fingers and toes to have changed the outcome of some of these games, right? Just because that's just who you were and who you are. But other people were more worried about just doing whatever they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I know, JC, you've probably heard Spurrier talk about how the players just didn't give a damn, you know? They didn't care. They stopped going to chapel. They stopped. And to be honest, like there was an aspect of it where he is actually spot on. And we would lose games and nobody would be upset. And I remember, like, we lost a game at Tennessee in kind of a heartbreak fashion in 15. And I know Spurrier at that time was already gone, but I remember calling my dad after the game, just being just heartbroken that we couldn't pull it out. Like, we had lost a couple games in a row and being like, I'd never been a part of a team that didn't win in my entire life. And so it was weird. That was a combination. And now, because of everything that happened, it has set us back.
I'm sorry, JC, I just want to give one follow up to that, because I think that's a $1 million quote right there. And I can tell you, I've covered a lot of coaches, a lot of different programs, and you can think you have it right. Like, nobody intentionally recruits kids that don't care about winning, but sometimes you just bring in the guys and you don't know what their personality profile is. You've seen some tape and you know what their 40 time is, and you know what they do in the weight room. That happens to the best of coaches, even Hall of Fame coaches like Steve Spurrier. But my final follow up to that is, before I give way to JC, what was watching a legend like Steve, who just brought South Carolina to such unbelievable heights, and then what did you see from him in practice in the locker room, seeing it just fall down so quickly? I mean, this is the way it happens to other programs too. Like, it's rarely a gradual decline. It's like you're up one moment, and then before you know it, within a year and a half, you're at rock bottom. Did you see the tea leaves that he might just say, you know what, the hell with it, I'm done, I'm out of here?
You know, no, we all had heard about the story of Coach going to Ray Tanner after we lost to Clemson in 2014 and saying like, hey, I'm done. And then Coach Tanner and Miss Jerry re-talked him back into coming back to coach the bowl game, right? I mean, he went in and resigned and was done going into, you know, at the end of the 14 season. They talked him into going and doing the bowl game. And then, you know, you go and you play a team like Miami, which, you know, he had played when he was at Florida. We go up and we beat him up a little bit, won the bowl game. And he probably thought to himself, you know what, I'm going to give it one more muster and one more push and see what can happen. But by then, we didn't have the horses in the stable to get him to where he needed to be. We didn't. I mean, there was a game in 2015 where we were playing. We had 5 walk-ons playing during the game on offense. Like, and I'm not saying, like, you can have a walk-on here and a walk-on there and somebody that slipped through the cracks that was a good player, whatever. But when you got 5 dudes, it was – a receiver, a tight end, quarterback, running back. It's like, you shouldn't have your skill guys on offense being led by a bunch of walk-ons. There's something's wrong there.
I think Hayden Hurst was a receiver that year too. Yeah.
Hayden was playing
receiver.
So like, there was just, you know, and not that it was like, there wasn't one certain thing. It was not like, okay, this was the reason. It was a combination of all of it.
And yeah, Debo Samuel was hurt the whole year too. I mean, and that at the time was not really stated because Debo was young.
Yeah.
But Debo gets into that Clemson game, all of a sudden you're like, where in the heck did this guy come from? You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at little things like, really how this offense should have been. At tight end, it should have been Jarrell Adams, Hayden Hurst. At receiver, ready for this name, blast from the past, should have been Shaq Rowland, Farrow Cooper, and Deebo Samuel. You talk about a lineup at receiver, right?
Yeah.
And then at running back, it would have been Brandon Wiles and David Williams, who were Brandon was a proven guy and David was a four star, could have played anywhere in the country. It was there, right? But then, you know, Shaq didn't show up, Deebo was hurt, Hayden was a little out of position and was new. And then you know, it just didn't mesh. And if you go back and you watch even into that, like, it was like if one side of the ball was playing good, the other didn't, right? And it's been that way now for 8 years.
You're right. Having Deke Adams and Whammy coach the D-line was not good either because they brought in a new good – they needed somebody to kind of – I don't know. Because they had a lot of new players on the D-line, like Marcavius Adams and stuff. But, yeah, you're right, both sides of the ball. I'll point this out about that 2015 – well, first of all, you ever think about the 2013 Tennessee game?
Yeah, all the time.
I'm like the Grim Reaper here. You know,
catches on. What's his name? North,
Marquez, right? North.
Yeah,
Marquez North called it. If Carolina holds on to win that game, you realize they probably could have played in the Rose Bowl. We probably could have been in the Rose Bowl playing Florida State for all the marbles because of the way everything crazy happened. The kick six with Auburn, and then Michigan State beat Ohio State, and
yeah,
that was crazy. And then in 2014, what was very frustrating about that year, 38-24 against Kentucky, 20-7 against Missouri, 42-28 against Tennessee. Gamecocks are up. Two of those were at home. Defense couldn't hold them at the end. Lost all three. Otherwise, that team would have been in Atlanta had they held on to two score leads late. So that was an interesting time.
It was weird because the pieces were there. It just didn't mesh. And, you know, it's easy to just run and say, well, the defense wasn't worth a darn because they weren't. But, it was a combination of a lot of it. And then, you fast forward to the years through now, you know, we've had a couple of decent teams in there. You know, I know Coach Muschamp in his second year, they had a hell of a roster. And they won nine games.
You look back on it. Yeah, they were loaded. A lot of NFL guys.
Loaded on both sides of the football. And, you know, and then, and you know, you fast forward to now, and we just seem to have not catch our stride. And I think that we're on the right path. There's for sure. I think that going into this season, and because I've been busy with work and being a dad, I haven't been able to dive into Gamecock football as much as I have in the past. I do. My number one question mark I look at is, you know, who's going to step up at receiver to help Lenoris? Who's that guy going to be? Right. Yeah. You look to Nick Harbor, but is he ready to be, you know, the Xavier Leggett of last year's team? Is he going to be the Juice Wells of the team before? You know, is he going to be able to be that guy? Because I don't know anybody else on the roster right now that has the ability to be that guy. You know, the defensively, I look at it, we're deep. I mean, with the way that they recruited the portal, they've got some guys that can play. They got some beef on the defensive line. They played well all summer. I've had the opportunity to get to know Clayton White. He works out at the gym that I work out at, and he's an amazing human being and a hell of a football coach. Just by chat with him, he's really excited about this defense this year. He feels confident that they've got the guys to play well. He believes that they've got some depth that's going to help them in the long run for that SEC stretch. And he made some good points. He said, you know, you know, they replaced Tennessee and Georgia for Alabama and Oklahoma. And he said, you know, Alabama's a new offense and a new place, but Alabama's that still Alabama. But he said, I'd rather play Oklahoma with the new quarterback than having to go play Tennessee in that offense, you know? LSU's got a new quarterback, and I know that guy can chunk it around the yard, but the teams that we play, they're bringing in new quarterbacks, and he feels excited about it. And my big thing is who's going to be able to get open and catch some passes. But Lenoris can run, clearly. We got some guys to run the football, and getting Coach Elliott back in the mix, bringing that inside zone and zone read. offense, I think, plays well into who we have at quarterback, both the Ashford kid and Lenoris. So, you know, I think they've made the moves they've needed to make to have a good run this year. It's just my big thing is who's gonna be catching these passes, that, because ultimately you're gonna need to throw the ball to win. And so we've got to, I don't know, kind of wait and see. There's always that one question mark every season that kind of leaves you a little uneasy. But
I always tell people Pharaoh Cooper caught 6 passes in 2013 and what, 69 the next year. So, but I don't know who, I think that's what you're saying. Apparently, I don't know who the Pharaoh is. I think we knew who the Pharaoh was last time. I asked Mike this and Hale this earlier, a healthy Rocket Sanders returning to 2022 form. Does that change your outlook?
It does. And here's why. I think that you can still use the Ashford kid to come in and run the football, right? You don't want to put a guy as athletic as him just on the bench. I think you can utilize their abilities and him and Lenoris's abilities, right? Like I would strongly, what's the right word? I would unadvise someone to get him in the I formation and be doing 7-step, you know, play act, draw fake, play action. Like Spurrier had Danny Werfel back in the mid-90s, right? I'd have him in the gun running inside zone and quarterback counter off jet motions and throwing off of that stuff, right? Because then eventually teams are going to have to rotate that extra hat into the box and close the middle. And when you get closed middle, you're either getting 1 or 3. And, you know, I don't know how these teams line up, you know, man or zone. It really depends on the coordinator. But when you're playing a team that's predominantly closed middle, it really limits what they can do defensively. And it lessens what the quarterback has to look at, which gives you more, you know, easier throws, easier reads, and better opportunities to be, you know, have a high completion percentage. And so when you run the quarterback, then on the other side of that too, they've got to play 11 on 11 football too. So having Rocket heavily involved in the run game with some of the guys and some of the new blood that we've got on the O-line with Coach Elliott bringing his level of intensity and expertise to it, I think we'll be able to run the football. Obviously, running the ball is great for controlling the game and, you know, staying ahead of the sticks, but you know, there comes a time in each and every game where there's a handful of those 3rd and 8s that really, really play to be very, very important, that when you convert and move those sticks and you know, get you in field goal range or get you that extra play before your big play and you score, those are important, and you got to find a way to, you know, complete a big pass to get yourself in that position.
If you can run the ball, you got to run it. It's good when you can run the ball on the road too, and go into Kentucky in week 2. And I'll say this, and I'll throw this to Mike as well. I was doing some research about LSU specifically. They haven't filled some of the holes on defense. Like, they're out there trying to piece together a D line right now, which is amazing because it's LSU and you can throw a rock and hit 4 or 5-star defensive linemen from that campus. They have issues at safety. They do have a new coordinator who I think is a special coach. But they've got some issues up front. I actually think Kentucky has a better defensive front coming back right now than LSU. So,
you're probably right.
Because they added the kid from Georgia, the big linebacker, Jumas Johnson. Mike, is that his name?
Correct. Yes. Kentucky, from Georgia. Yeah. Georgia fans were hitting the panic button as if they should. When
that
they
dude
lost
was him. Playing. I mean, yeah, he was. It wasn't like he was a bench warmer and had
not
going
at all
for snaps. He's a stud, and they've got their stud. They're in that Carolina couldn't block last year back. I mean, Kentucky's defensive front solid. LSU has some questions, but I think that is helpful to your point, guys. That with those two teams early in the season, of course, anytime you play like an Old Dominion, you want to be able to run the football. You don't want one of those. Far too many. We've seen 20 carries for 31 yards in games total rushing offense. You don't want one of those.
It does something to your psyche too. And JC, you nailed it on the head running on the road. When you have a run called and you're at quarterback and you're like, you're seeing nothing but hand in here, 4 yards, 5 yards, then he breaks a 10 yard run. You know, he might get 2, but then the next run, 6 yard gain. It kind of just helps you breathe. I don't know how to explain it. You just feel like you're like, okay, it's not all on me. I don't have to 3rd and there, it's a mental thing, right? You know, that the mental side of the game just goes so under the radar, especially for the athletes when they're out on the field. When you're seeing that success of the running, of all sorts of the different running plays, and to have a back like a Rocket Sanders that can get 25 carries a game, if you can lean into that, then, you know, realistically, you're going to get about 60 to 70 plays in a game. I know some offenses get way more, but if you can throw it 20 to 25, you get a couple carries with Rocket, you know, 25 with Rocket, maybe 7 with Lenoris, a couple with Ashford, and a couple other with the back. There's your game right there, right? So what I have found in calling plays myself over the last couple of years, when you can get to that 60-40 run balance, run pass balance, you're in a good position. When you start getting heavy one way or the other is where things just get out of line. But when you can control the line of scrimmage, and I know it sounds like so cliche, when you can control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, but really speaking from the offensive standpoint, when you know you can, you know, pretty much call any run play in your playbook and you're going to get that 4 yards, it helps you breathe knowing, like, you know, hey, I can get to second and four pretty easily. And that keeps you ahead of sticks.
It's kind of funny because we're talking about the Kentucky game, and I think you could almost parallel this to Missouri, the way they won games last year with Schrader and leading the league in rushing. I think this year's installment of Gamecock football, and I love the passing game. I'm a pass guy, and I love receivers making big plays and quarterbacks making great throws. And certainly you're going to need some of that. Like I always said, just kind of what you were talking about, everything sounds like a good game plan until you can't convert with a pass on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. Like, those plays have to be made, and you can't just run for them. Quarterback has to be able to make those throws. But I think Carolina offensively this year might resemble, if they're going to be successful, what Kentucky has kind of built over the years at Mark Stoops, what Missouri has shown a bit more recently under Eli, is that, you know, we're not going to go out there every week and have superior wide receivers to our SEC brethren, but we're going to smash mouth you. We're going to control the game. We're going to win the battle of turnovers. Yep. We're going to show you some ground and pound. I mean, to me, that would be more of a winning formula in 2024.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think Coach Elliott is going to bring a really unique style to what we have done in the past and what we've done recently under Coach Beamer's, under his teams. You know, obviously we got Dowell calling the plays, but Coach Elliott, you know, is going to have a heavy influence, maybe not in the calling of plays, but the game plan week in and week out. But, you know, what made Coach Elliott's zone offenses so good was having the quarterback, just having the ability to run, right? Lenoris is obviously incredibly gifted in that department, but having somebody that can, pull the ball and go and get 4 yards when that edge defender, you know, gets super tight and starts getting too nosy inside, right? Just to keep that guy honest, it keeps an extra hat out of the box. You get on double teams, and as long as, you know, the offensive line is able to get push in from the interior, right? Then you can really, really run that, you know, you can run the ball well with that style of offense, right? I've been more of a gap scheme guy with the powers and the counters and the pin and pulls, but you know, inside zone can play a big part in it too, especially when you're willing and wanting to run the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Georgia State and their stats while he was there; they don't really stop it. And so let me ask you this, and then we'll wrap it up, because this is something I've always just assumed, but it's one of those things you think you know, but you don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Playbook at Carolina when you were there, it was essentially this: Sean Elliott's run game that he brought down from App State with the fun and gun as the passing game. And it worked. It worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys ran it just as well as any period in Carolina history. So my guess would be, as it relates to Dowell Loggins, because it's sort of like a Lego deal where before they've plugged this run game into a pro style passing system like Coach Spurrier's, do you think that could be a combination that would work out if that's the way that they actually are doing it now, just like you guys did it then?
Yeah, I think so too. What made Coach Spurrier's pass game easy. And you can blend the two together, right? Because they're almost two separate offenses in their own right, where the run game doesn't have to, like, you don't have to call a run play necessarily to better serve your passing concepts, right? Besides, like, maybe some play action and RPO stuff, which teams are getting to, but a lot of teams this past, you know, towards the end of last year, they were just getting straight into drop back, you know, with a little bit of play action. But I think you can do both. And I think what made Coach Spurrier's offense, adoptable from a quarterback standpoint was once you understood that everything, all the reads were in a triangle, you had 1-2-3, but it was right there. It was like 1-2-3. And you just followed that triangle. You could have a high completion percentage as long as you have time to make the appropriate reads and then make the throws. His thing was, and you guys have heard me talk about it all the time, his thing was, how can I get them into quarters coverage to throw the post over their head? That was all he wanted to do. How can I get them to two safeties to where I can play action, make those guys take one step up, and have my guys throw it as deep and as far down the middle of the field as they can?
That was interesting, because that was a point Ellis Johnson told a friend of mine, or maybe it's Brad Lawing, the late Brad Lawing, said Spurrier didn't really mess with the defense, but he was against quarters coverage because he lit it up all the time. And they finally they were like, you know, we need to play quarters for these reasons. Like, all right, well, shoot, you just go ahead and do it. I'll just light it up, you know.
Yep.
So, I never knew that about the triangle, man. That's like a video game kind of thing. That's
it is. Yeah, it is. It made it super easy. You go back and watch. A lot of it's quick. A lot of the ball's out of the hand, right? But it was quick run, play action, launch, right? And then
it was in rhythm, it was beautiful. I mean, back to the Florida days. I mean, you just – it was poetry on the field, dude. And when it got clicking, now when it was ugly, it was ugly. But it was when it got clicking, it was.
And I think where it got clicking was that he expected things a certain way. And you would just do plays and routes on repeat until the ball was put in the spot on the field where he wanted it. Right. Where, I mean, vividly as today is May 7th and is a Tuesday, I can remember him getting upset after passes were complete because he was looking in a spot on the field where a receiver may have been open, but the ball was completed elsewhere. And he'd be like, why didn't you put it there? Why didn't you put it down the hat? He was there. He was open. Well, coach, we got 20 yards. All right. Next play. It just would piss him off, man. He was a real treat, man. Not working in the sports world, in the business world, you know, I was in Colorado a couple of weeks ago and met some folks, and, you know, we got to talking about, oh, you know, where are you from? But I told him I played football at South Carolina, and they're like, did you happen to play for Steve Spurrier? I said, yes, I did, for 3 years. And they were like, what was that like? You know, he's a household name in the game, and what a great life experience to have. So it was cool.
No doubt. Perry, really appreciate your time, Thank you, Perry. And we know you're going to be back for football and part of our lineup this year. And we're very excited about that. We love the segments. And congratulations again on all you've accomplished in the business world and coaching and in life.
Appreciate that, man.
Couldn't be happier for you right now with the way things are going. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you soon.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate you. See ya.
See you, Perry.
That was a heck of a segment.
And you know, I don't always catch the show. And you would have Perry on what days during the season?
I don't know about this year yet.
But last year,
Phil, it was Tuesdays or Thursdays.
Thursday or Wednesday. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, he wasn't coming right off the weekend. That was on Monday.
He and DeMarco were.
Yeah, I would usually catch DeMarco, which is also a great one. I mean, this show's guest list is. And Fuego, but I'd never heard those questions asked to Perry, so I wanted to get those out. And I would record those answers and play them on a loop. That was very telling. I thought it was very telling.
There's parts of that interview that are going to be.
I would think, that might
soon.
Be promo worthy, Big Spur worthy, Sponge worthy
CBS video. The folks at CBS are going to be happy with that. Happy with me for that. So.
Yeah, I think that was very, and I've just. Because that got, of course, Chat Row fired up. Look, I'm not going to tell you how to feel about the way everything went down. And I'm glad he mentioned, by the way, and I've met Jerry Spurrier a number of times. I just saw her a couple months ago when I was in Gainesville calling games and had dinner with Shane Matthews. And we had a long chat with Steve and Jerry, because they happened to be at the same restaurant and so on and so forth. But Jerry was very instrumental in Steve staying and coaching. The blame it on Ray Tanner crowd, like, no AD was going to go and say, you know what, Hall of Fame coach that's just given us our best successful run in the history of the program, it's probably a good idea you just leave, because we got a great succession plan in place. Yeah, you know, we're Carolina, we can get anybody who we want. That's insane. That's insane talk. Now, obviously, the Muschamp hire didn't work. He did win 17 games his first 2 years. You heard Perry talk about the 9-win team in year two and how talented it was. But for whatever reason, it petered out, and the rest is history. You had to fire Will. But I would never second-guess trying to keep Steve Spurrier around, because there was still some coaching left in him. You know, he wound up coaching
Apollos. Yeah,
whatever that crappy league that folded was.
And so he says it too.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it's we joke about it all the time on this show, you know, the blame game about this, that, and the other. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Carolina football, once Steve was done, basically resorted back to where it was for 100 years. It wasn't decisions at the top that forced Gamecock football to where it was now. It's been this way minus 4 years under Steve. We've talked about JC when you and I were doing shows in Columbia. People wanted Steve fired before 2010. Go back and look at 05 to 09. It's a 500 program, and there are a lot of fans who are like, hey, he's washed up. He doesn't even care about things here. Let him go. And then, you know, the question, what I would always pose, and it's not like I'm trying to say I'm right and somebody else is wrong. I really don't know the answer. Like, who was the perfect hire when your Hall of Fame coach decides, I just can't, I don't want it anymore? Who was the perfect hire at that point? Or if you said, Steve, I'm going to make this easy on you, you're gone anyway. Okay, what was your brilliant plan to who was going to be the successor to Steve? Well, everybody thinks they have a plan until you don't, or it doesn't work.
Well, he had all right. So at the time, and look, it was much more Spurrier's family who probably would have more influence over
correct
him than an athletic director,
of course,
honest. And the school president. And Spurrier, if you notice, even at Florida, he's the type of coach that would bypass the AD in a heartbeat and go to
amen. President. You think Jeremy Foley wanted him to leave after 2001 so he could hire Ron Zook?
School president. I was going to go straight to the president, you know. That's me. Shoot, I'm the head ball coach. But Pastides didn't want him to leave. And obviously, they did a little recruiting. Ray Tanner, he had a short list. I mean, it was the same two guys that were on the short list for the next year, Tom Herman and Kirby Smart.
Right.
So Herman was even – they probably would have gotten Tom Herman if Spurrier had hung it up then, because he was at Ohio State still as the OC. I don't know how the timing would have worked out, because Ohio State played for a national championship that year, but maybe it would have, you know. But I was at that Independence Bowl, walking out of the stadium. Carolina won the game. It was kind of pretty sad, kind of a sad deal, though, because you kind of knew at that time, like, this is probably about it. 7-6, they beat Florida, Georgia, and Miami in the same year. That's good on as far as the history of those programs go. But you just got a bad feeling. And then somehow they beat North Carolina in the 2015 opener. And that North Carolina team won 9 games. And then it was all downhill from there. But I think that the program under Muschamp, all told, was probably a lot like old Lou Holtz in his tenure. He didn't have the 0-11 necessarily, but he had three losing seasons, 3 bowl games. Holtz had 2. And I think Muschamp left Beamer a lot of good players to kind of get them through the last couple of years where they won 7 and 8 and probably would have won 6 or 7 last year had they not had some unfortunate injuries. There's enough in the tank to get to the baseline standard, which is getting to a bowl. But, you know, I think with the way Beamer's recruiting, if people will just kind of give it time and then get back up on the horse next year and get back to the postseason, he can continue to build. And I mean, you know, South Carolina in its history just had never gotten an out of state composite 5-star. Well, they've gotten 2 in the last 2 years. They're about to get a third. That's out of state. The state's talent level is about to come back up. And then you always have the transfer portal, which helps you erase recruiting mistakes.
Right.
You don't have to rely on guys that can't play dead in a movie end up getting jettisoned, and you just replace them with guys who can. Mm-hmm. And so that's something to watch too. But anyway, I'm sorry for yammering on and on and on. That was just such a great segment, and certainly I want to react to it. But we got to get to a break. Phil, I think we're going to double up here a little bit, right?
Not at this one, but yeah, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll double at the hour.
All right. Thanks, Phil. This is Inside the Gamecast Show. We'll be back in a minute.
The State Farm Personal Price Plan helps you create an affordable price just for you.
Contact local agent Gary Patterson for your personal price plan today.
Touchdown Brewer. Set up a screen, and it goes to Brewer. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown Brewer, his second of the day. Pitches it to Brewer. Turns to corner, touchdown, number 3 of the afternoon.
Hey folks, it's Mike Morgan for Ryan Brewer Fence. That's right, you know the former Gamecock legend as a terrific college football player. Well, I know him as that too. I also know him as the guy that runs a great business, one of the best businesses in South Carolina. How do I know that? Well, for one, I'm actually a client of Ryan's. I had my home in Columbia done years ago, and his crew did an outstanding job, just as he does for everybody else. Whether you're in the market for a fence, railings, columns, or anything in between, their craftsmanship, their experience, and service second to none. Ryan Brewer Fence has over 15 years of experience with consultation and installation of residential and commercial fencing and railings. Rest assured, your job will be done with an unparalleled level of expertise, and it's done on time, and they do it right the first time. Again, you're not going to do any better than Ryan Brewer. Ryan Brewer Fence. The website is ryanbrewer.net. Set up an appointment today. Tell them Mike sent you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My company is Billy G's Carolina Barbecue. We are based in Columbia, South Carolina. And we have 2 lines of sauces and a spice rub. I mean, when people try our product, they know it's a gourmet product and it can go on any type of food. It's not surprisingly delicious. It's expectedly delicious.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
The State Farm Personal Price Plan helps you create an affordable price just for you.
Contact local agent Gary Patterson for your personal price plan today.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of the second hour inside the Gamecocks, the show. Mike Morgan in for Wall-to-Wall Power Hour again on a Tuesday. JC Sherbert here. Stream on, stream on. That's right. That's exactly what we do every day from 11 to 2. Don't miss out on all the latest from around the Gamecock Athletics program. I was sitting on my back porch yesterday and noticed that I was in desperate need of some new cushions. We have a decent set of outdoor furniture, but we have a terrible set of cushions. And my first thought was Palm Casual. We're going to be down in the low country a little later, so we were going to check it out, as you all should, because, of course, anything you get from Palm Casual is going to be, well, less expensive, A, because they're the manufacturer, especially when it comes to cushions, and, hey, they give you a 30-day money-back guarantee, satisfaction guarantee for 30 days. So party on it for 29, go take it back on the 30th and swap it out and get you some clean ones, and then just keep rolling on with a good set of outdoor furniture cushions.
Pretty soon you can add me to the list of distinguished Palm Casual clientele.
They got a great selection, man. Whatever you need. Mm-hmm.
I looked online and looked at some of the stuff, and it is, yeah. I mean, look, as I like to say, we only go around this crazy world once. There's no reason to go Walmart on the patio furniture. You might as well be comfortable and enjoy the good life. And they do a great job over there. So I'm excited. It's on order, as they say. Love the job that they do over there at Palm Casual. Love that interview with Perry Orth. That was great stuff. Really, really excited to hear some of that back, honestly.
All right, so we got some news, and I knew it was coming. So I need to mention this before we get to your starting five. And
this stinks.
I hope the graphic holds up.
Yeah, it does. Fortunately, he was not a projected starter. Yeah,
everybody kind of speculated about this. Okay, because here's a kid in Kentucky that lit it up senior year over in that place you always talk about, Mike. I know you drive right through there to see summer, because I drive right through there when I'm coming back to Chicago from South Carolina up 75. Mm-hmm. And those folks that love Kentucky basketball, well, this kid played in that part of the state and just a three-point machine, had a big senior year. South Carolina identified him, recruited him, landed him, had an NIL deal, ready to roll. He asked out of his letter of intent today, which tells me this. Big Blue has come a-knocking on his door. And look, from South Carolina standpoint, it sucks because he's a good player. Now you got to go play against him. But I can't blame a kid that dreamed of playing at Kentucky and Rub from Kentucky for wanting to go to Kentucky.
Right.
I just can't. Yeah, right. I can't get mad at him, you know.
You can blame Cal, because that's the kind of kid Cal doesn't recruit. That's the kind of kid Mark Pope is going to recruit every time, because he understands the value of that kind of player.
Right.
Oh, well, think about the history. I mean, Kentucky, but Rick Pitino had guys like that from the state.
Absolutely. Really good, you know? Including Mark Pope.
Yeah. Right. So there you go. And look, I haven't read that he's definitely going to UK, but I would be shocked if that wasn't the case. I mean, you know, I would not. I haven't heard Louisville have made their coaching change quicker and earlier. I heard anything about Louisville, so my guess it would be was Big Blue came a knocking, because we put together a little graphic during Drive Around the SEC last week, and yeah, they've got 7-8 guys from the portal, Mike, but they don't. You still need more for your roster, right? You know,
right?
They had like 12 openings, so
yeah.
I'd like to say this shocks me, but it doesn't, because he's a good player and can. I always thought he could definitely play there.
Yeah, so I mean, if this is in fact the case, and I just sent out a text message to see if I can get a little confirmation on some things, but this is not a knock on anything Carolina, Lamont Paris, or anything under that umbrella. This is, as you eloquently put, JC, this is a kid, when you grow up in the state of Kentucky, if UK does offer, that's where you go. 99 times out of 100. Cal has been criticized. Yeah, I just got confirmation. It's Kentucky money. Mm-hmm. The emojis I got were because I asked the question. UK came knocking for Noah. Then I put $2 signs and I got the emojis back with a bullseye and a dart right in the middle of it. So, and that's from somebody who would definitely know this. Yeah. This is when a kid like that grows up, and you have to understand Kentucky, there is no Louisville. I think a lot of people look at Louisville like they do Clemson. It's not even close. Kentucky dwarfs Louisville, not just in overall success, but having spent a lot of time in that state recently, It is, I don't know, 85% Kentucky. Is overwhelmingly Kentucky. So all those kids grow up almost without exception of being Kentucky Wildcats. And Cal, this is the kind of guy that Cal's like, well, he ain't going to be a lottery pick, so I'm not offering him. Well, Mark Pope says, no, that's the way things used to be done around here. That's not the way they're going to be done anymore. If the kid can play, he can help us. Kentucky, minus last year, was usually one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. And so you bring in a guy like that, and they'll find a role for him. And I'll go over my lineup. It doesn't change. I didn't have him in the starting five anyway, but you don't want to lose him. But it's not the end of the world. It opens up a scholarship. And again, it's not a knock on Carolina at all. It's just when that's your dream school from the moment you come out of the womb and they finally come knocking, and financially speaking, Kentucky's not going to get outbid on a basketball player like ever.
No,
so it's a no brainer for him.
And knowing I know I'm never going to disclose numbers, but NIL was significant, but not, you know, not as much as some other players out there would have wanted. But look, man, hey, hats off to him. He was loyally committed to South Carolina, chasing a dream. I can't blame anybody for that. If I was playing at Kentucky or committed to Kentucky for football, and then Carolina came in with an offer late, I'd flip. You know, no offense to Mark Stoops and that bunch. They're fine American people.
Right.
But this is my dream to play at South Carolina.
If you grew up in Irmo,
yeah, you know,
and for whatever reason, South Carolina didn't offer at a high school and you committed to Kentucky, and then Shane all of a sudden said, no, I'm the new coach and I see value in you. Why don't you come home? Guess what's happening? He's coming home. He's playing for the Gamecocks.
Back in my bags. Yeah. So that's how it is. South Carolina's probably going to go for, I don't know what direction they'll go to replace the spot, but it's probably going to be a younger player. Whittle pointed out in the report, you know, South Carolina's got a lot of older, they'll lose probably 6-7 guys off next year's roster. So the preference would be to get another, it doesn't necessarily have to be a freshman, but a younger player that's got some, a long eligibility runway.
The way it works, JC, correct me if I'm wrong, because the, you know, people hear the portal window closes and then they're like, well, why are still players still transferring? I thought the window was closed. If a team essentially, for lack of a better term, runs a player off, right, does not renew his scholarship, then you can still go in the portal and transfer even though the window is closed. Is that not right?
Yeah, there's a lot of exceptions. Now, this particular young man had not enrolled yet. So he has to get out of his letter of intent. In other words, like Cam Scott with Texas. And in basketball – they're usually pretty cool about it. I've seen some coaches in football refuse, you know, but in basketball, they're usually pretty cool about it. Just like Cam Scott with Texas, you know, he was not yet there. And so this guy doesn't necessarily have to go in the portal. He goes back into the recruitable student athlete pot out of high school. So that's the deal there. So
the sky is not falling. There doesn't need to be a meltdown on the message boards, right? I mean, this is just This is where we are in college athletics. And truth be told, like, you know, I had him in the bench rotation, but he was going to have to fight for minutes because he wasn't going to start. And I have, and I'll give you my starting five and my bench later. But you've got guys like Studi and Jacoby Wright coming off the bench. you know, it was not like he was going to average 20 minutes a game next year.
Studi coming back now, and there was really not a lot of question whether or not Studi was coming back, but him coming back, that make the loss of Noah makes that more important, you know, I think.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
I think Noah, had Studi moved on or whatever, Noah was probably going to take those minutes, but it stinks, but, you know, like I said, it's Kentucky basketball. The Roman Empire of college basketball, as Rick Pitino likes to say, so.
I'd rather have... This is not me throwing out the baby with the bathwater. No knock on Noah. I wish him well. I hope to see him at a Kentucky basketball game next winter. But I'd rather have Cam Scott. Yeah. Cam Scott's a different level talent.
He's an elite. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. So if you want to look what, you know, what's good for the Goose, Carolina has poached some guys. And every now and then, some of your guys are going to be poached. That's where we are.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, what we are is at the end of the hour. Yeah.
One more
JC,
hour
bring
to
us
go
to the end, and we'll have some more fun in hour number three, right? I mean,
yeah, plenty of fun.
But the party hasn't stopped yet. I got another keg right over here. I'm ready to tap it.
Oh, we ain't right, leaving until six in the morn. That's right. All right,
so much drama in the ITG. It's kind of hard being JC. Yes,
that's awesome. All right. We'll be back in the Cinerama Studios for hour number three of ITG Inside the Gamecocks. The show rolls on after these messages.
Hey, Gamecock fans. This is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark, and go Gamecocks.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet. The best selection of new Chevys. The lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
That's the power.
Hey Gamecock Nation, my name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever and I've never felt more confident in my golf. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecocks!
We have started in 1979. Because we're a manufacturer, we're able to control our costs. That's why we like to manufacture as much of the product as we can, because in our factory stores, we can offer a competitive edge over other people around the country. When people come into one of our Palm Casuals, it's like they're buying their car at Detroit. They're going right to the factory and buying their car.
30-day money-back guarantee. That's a big deal with us. I mean, we give 30 days to do anything. I mean, return it, change it, get a different color, get your money back.
When you pull into a store and it says Palm Casual, you know you're at a factory store.
Rescues and Resin, proud supporters of Carolina Rise. They are also proud partners of the show. They make products you can't get anywhere else. Custom designed wood and resin products that make your tailgate, make your home, or make anything stand out. Order a custom cutting board, coasters, wall art, tables, and more. contact Dustin and Tabitha at rescuesandresin.com today. Rescuesandresin.com, and put your imagination to work. Rescues and Resin, proud partners of Inside the Gamecocks, the show. It's 2024, and it's time to get in shape. Charleston Fitness Equipment can help you do just that in Mount Pleasant. The Wilkins family, big Gamecock fans and proud supporters of Carolina Rise and our programming on the Chief Sports Network. But most importantly, proud supporters of you getting healthy and staying healthy. CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Find them on the Chief Sports app and in Mount Pleasant. Happy New Year.